So Chris Hopson, Chief Executive of NHS Providers here. I'm in the room with Ted Baker, the Chief Inspector at CQC. And we wanted to have a conversation about a really important issue, I think, which is about effective and safe staffing. It's an issue that lots of providers have got some interesting views and also potentially some concerns around. And we're having the conversation really in the context of a document that the CQC has recently produced on effective staffing resources, which is effectively 25 case studies about how they believe organisations are making this work effectively. So Ted, let's just start off with a bit around why have you done this document and why are you focusing on this issue?
Well, providers have told us that, workforce issues are their biggest challenge and is their biggest risk. And we as a regulator want to be supportive in helping people find solutions. There aren't easy, straightforward solutions. We don't believe that, and we're not trying to suggest there are. But what we are trying to do is say, we as a regulator want to support you in thinking innovatively about how you provide safe staffing. And we want to do that in a way that helps you. It doesn't get in your way. Having said that, we have a very important role in ensuring safety. So we need to combine those roles imaginatively to make sure that providers can move forward without fear that the CQC is going to take an inflexible approach to their staffing arrangements.
And it seems to us that what you've done is, it feels to us this slightly sits in a series of documents. So we thought there was some really interesting work that you've done in terms of looking at trusts that have made either a single or a double jump in their ratings. You did one for mental health, you did one looking at the acute sector. You also did that really helpful document on how a trust's implementing approach to quality improvement. So everybody thinks the CQC is just about being an inspector and being a register, but actually, from some of the work that we've seen from you, there's been some really interesting stuff saying, look, this is what's working, this is what's best practice, and it feels to us like this document, this set of resources fits in that space. Is that right?
I think very much so, and I'd encourage our listeners to look at those quality improvement documents if they haven't looked at them. They are really very important, and I should stress that where we see really successful organisations, sometimes dealing with some really difficult operational, financial and quality issues, it's quality improvement culture built by a really strong leadership team that makes a difference. And workforce is one of the challenges they face. And this is an opportunity to link that work to focusing on workforce, to give them an opportunity to drive forward improvements in workforce using quality improvement techniques.
It also seems to us that this is a particularly kind of interesting issue because it has been a source of some sort of disagreement. We know there were some noises off in terms of people saying the only way you can kind of guarantee safe staffing is by using kind of set ratios. We also know that we have some people who think that the CQC adopts a very kind of mechanistic approach in terms of just measuring against kind of staffing ratios. And sometimes we kind of hear providers say they don't quite know where they stand in terms of, the CQC in relation to this issue. They sometimes sort of feel that, you might be trying to block innovation, and that actually if they want to do something different, they can't for fear of upsetting you, or, issues around, CQC inspectors kind of coming in, as I said, sort of immediately demanding straight away, let's see the kind of spreadsheets and let's see, have you hit your staffing ratio. So our kind of sense is it's welcome in that people, I think, kind of want to understand more about what the CQC approach in this area is.
Okay, well, I think if people feel we're blocking innovation, challenge us. Please challenge us. I mean, we may be doing that without the intending to do it, and we are open to challenge on that. We want to support innovation. But clearly we have a role to make sure that services are safe. So there's a balance, therefore, we have to pursue, and we need providers' support in helping us pursue that balance. Now, one of the things I hear anecdotally is that CQC will never allow you to change staffing ratios or whatever because we have very fixed ideas about that. We don't. But sometimes we're perceived to, because, for instance, we go into a trust and we say, how do you ensure safe staffing? How do you guarantee that your staffing is consistently safe? And the trust will say to us, well, we stick to a ratio, a nursing to patient ratio that we're very firm about. What we'll do then is go out into the wards, look at the rotas and see whether that ratio is being delivered or not. We're not imposing the ratio. We're just checking that the trust has assurance that the tools it's using to ensure safety are actually working for it. And so sometimes people perceive us as imposing ratios that we don't perceive and that we don't impose. But we inevitably have to go and check that the evidence is there, that the trust is providing safe care and can be confident it's providing safe care. And if the trust wants to try innovative approaches to staffing, please come and talk to us about it. Don't wait until the inspection comes. Come and talk to us about what you've got planned. Explain why you believe it will be safe. Explain how you will be sure it's safe. Explain what the governance will be in place for that. We'll ask challenging questions, but we want to support you to succeed. We don't want to get in the way of doing new ways of staffing, because we recognise staffing is an absolute key challenge. And if we just ignore that fact, we are not helping people provide safe services.
And that seems to me to be the way you describe it as a really important distinction. So, you know, the argument that I sometimes hear is that, you know, the CQC is sticking very rigorously to 1 to 8 and they come in and straight away ask for the spreadsheets. But the way you're describing it is you'll ask trusts, what is their approach? How are they seeking to ensure safe staffing? And what you'll then go and do is collect evidence that that approach is kind of being adopted.
Yes, absolutely, which is what they ought to be doing. If they're using that as their standard to ensure safety, they should have that evidence. So when we ask for it, we expect them to be able to demonstrate it. But equally, if they're looking at it in a different way, an equally credible way, an equally effective way to ensure safe staffing by a different approach, not using ratios, but perhaps using other tools, and there are lots of tools out there, then we are quite willing to work with them on that as well.
Yeah, so it's effectively, I mean, the argument that this is purely mechanistic, effectively, the argument is we're just kind of following through on what you've told us you're going to be doing. Yes. And we don't just kind of come in and say, well, is it 1 to 8? Actually, we say, what's the approach you're adopting? And is the evidence consistently there that that is the approach that's being
followed? That's exactly our approach. And I think if we misinterpret what you're doing, there's an opportunity to challenge it. And we always give trusts an opportunity to challenge our draft report, because these issues are complex, and we want to give people a chance to say, actually, you're misinterpreting the data. We believe the data shows our service is safe for these reasons. Yeah. And we'll always take that seriously. But it has to be credible. It has to be based on sound data. And so trusts need to think really hard about how do we guarantee services are safe, the staffing is safe. And then if they're confident they're doing that, they should be able to demonstrate it to us.
Okay. So one of the things that we really liked about those documents that you published, looking at kind of best practice in both, you know, single and double jump ratings jumps, but also in terms of the QI, was just you not only laid out some case studies, but you also tried to draw out some of the underlying principles that affect the underlying themes that underpin those case studies. So tell us a bit more of, do you think there are some kind of underlying themes from the 25 case studies that you've got here?
I do. There are 25 case studies. I don't believe that is all the innovation going on out there. These are just the 25 we've chosen to demonstrate. Other people will be doing other different innovative things, and we want to work with them. I think what the chief principles that I see coming out of this are, first of all, multidisciplinary working. And there's really effective use of allied healthcare professionals in many of these case studies. Use of the new nursing associates effectively. There's real opportunities for people to learn from each other's experience and to drive forward those that use of different skills and different people from different professional backgrounds in a very imaginative way. And I think one of the things that is clear to me is that in these case studies, the barriers between different professional groups have been broken down. And so the multidisciplinary team is not just in traditional sense of people doing their own bit of the job. It is actually working together in an integrated way, with everyone leading on what they are experts on. And so providing the right care for the patients at the right time, and providing that care more quickly where necessary and more efficiently. I think the other message that really comes out of this, and this listening to the work of the NHS long term plan, is people are designing new models of care, which is great. But those new models of care must be designed taking into account the available workforce. You don't design a model of care, the ideal model of care, then think as a secondary issue, how do I staff it? You design the model of care, take into account the workforce. I think it's very easy to design models of care that actually are not practically deliverable because you can't, you'll never be able to recruit the staff to do it. So actually think about what workforce resources have I got and how can I best provide care for the patients that I'm looking after using those workforce resources. And if you look at it that way, I think you can do it. You can drive some real innovation in the way you use staff. And the third thing is, of course, leadership. And, you know, really effective multidisciplinary leadership makes a big difference.
As I look at Trust kind of doing, looking at these issues, so two or three things strike me. The first is that the people who I think kind of seem to be doing this really well, first of all, they're really, really clear about what the kind of Trust policy and approach is. So people know exactly what they're meant to be doing. Secondly, though, there's an appropriate degree of flexibility in terms of, you know, stuff happens, care needs, particularly in the kind of acute inpatient settings, will quite often kind of change. But thirdly, crucially, there is a proper set of assurance and governance around this. So the last Trust I visited, there was a kind of 3 times a day check, formal team sat at the centre in an operating room and just checked ward by ward, where were they up to, and they were able to therefore kind of get that kind of flexibility. Does that kind of resonate?
I think that's right. And of course, what we haven't touched on so far is how do you vary your staffing during the working day, during the working week, depending on the demand that you have and the patient population you're seeing. And I think that really is very key. So staffing is never fixed, which is one of the reasons why talking about ratios just doesn't sound right, because I know from my own clinical experience it takes one or two patients who've got really major demands who can distort your staffing patterns dramatically, literally overnight or very quickly. So how does the system respond to that? And I think that's difficult, and that depends on good clinical leadership on the ground. What I'd challenge organisations about is think through your escalation policies, because I think we have often found organisations who say they've got an escalation policy, but in actual fact we don't see evidence that it's working. Wherever you are, you must be able to predict where you're going to get increase and surges in demand, particularly at the front door of the organisation. And how do you make sure your staffing is always ready for that? And if you get unexpected surges, how do you increase your staffing to deal with it? And increase it just not in numbers, but also in capabilities.
I'm just slightly intrigued about how some of these myths have kind of grown up. So kind of listening to you, there is a kind of a welcome kind of description of a degree of kind of flexibility here. And whenever I talk to people about this on the front line, what they say is it all kind of feels from the sort of, you know, NHSE, NHSI, CQC bit that it's all very inflexible, it's all very, very ratio-based. But actually listening to kind of what you said, that isn't the kind of the way that you approach things. But nevertheless, that perception has grown up. Why do we think that is?
I don't know. A lot of people tell me what the CQC thinks, but they haven't actually asked us what we think. And I think there is a kind of mythology that sometimes develops around regulation. I'm sure that sometimes our inspectors on the ground, you know, in the way they are looking at evidence, kind of create an impression that they've got very fixed views. That is not their position. But clearly they have a job to do. And I'd encourage people to understand that we have a job to do, you have a job to do, but actually we have the same aim, to make sure that patients are getting the best possible care. And we need to work together on that and not see ourselves in competition or challenging one another in ways that are unhelpful. We certainly, as a regulator, want to help people provide the best care, but we have a job to do. And so what we will not do is accept weak evidence of safety when people should be able to demonstrate strong evidence of safety. We will not accept finger-in-the-air attitude to staffing. We want people to actually be, as you say, to have the right governance and assurance in place to make sure their staffing is consistently safe. But that's our side of the job. But equally, we don't want to get in the way of the innovation. The innovation often occurs, as you say, in some of the best organisations, at the front line in the clinical services. And we don't want to get in the way of that. And I think it's important people, you know, understand that regulation is a partnership. We have a job, providers have a job. Let's try and build a really positive partnership, particularly around things like workforce, which we recognise is an enormous challenge.
So talking about workforce being a challenge, just give us a sense about where you think this work fits into quite a lot of broader national work that's going on in this workforce space. So there's the interim people plan, there's the people plan. Where does this kind of fit with that stuff?
Well, as I said earlier on, the workforce issue is not a, there's no simple solution, and we're not suggesting we've found a simple solution to this. There has to be lots of things done, and the national agenda around the interim people plan and the, you know, the issues in there about how they're going to strengthen the workforce, recruit, train more people in the workforce is absolutely key to that. So we fully support that, and this is not an alternative. This is just saying, actually, we need to do everything possible to work with that. And as I've already highlighted, within the NHS long-term plan, we're looking at integrating and collaborating across systems. So there's real opportunity to use workforce in a different way there. And again, we don't, as the regulator, want to get in the way of that, provided it's done in a safe way and the governance of it is effective. And I think that is where we'll be challenging on that. So we very much fit in with that. And we fit in, of course, with the new work going around new roles, such as nursing associates, and actually how can we use those most effectively. And again, we want to be supportive of that.
Can I just come back to the challenge point? I think people are sometimes a bit nervous about challenging the CQC because they sometimes think that perhaps it might reverberate around their ears. So a kind of sort of slight sense of you're slightly taking your life in your hands when you provide some challenge back. So just give us a sense of how it works from your perspective.
That's a good point. And I think I've heard that from people. We do get challenged a lot, actually. And we do not in any way, we're not critical of people wanting to challenge us. We look at the quality of the challenge, Chris. And you know, sometimes challenge is, we don't like what you've said. We don't like your opinion, which, you know, is fine. But actually, we can't respond to that. If the challenge is, you've misinterpreted the evidence and we actually believe we're providing a safe service when you think we're not, then that's a valid challenge. Give us the evidence. But if the challenge is, we just don't like what you've said about us, that's not really a constructive challenge. So what I'd say to people is, we are open to challenge, but it has to be constructive. And we're not going to respond to challenge that is, if you like, about opinions.
We don't like what
you say. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So just to kind of bring it to a conclusion, what's your kind of sense of what you would like people to do once they have read these 25 kind of case studies, which I think they can find on your website? What's the sort of two or three things that perhaps you'd most like people to do having done that?
Well, I hope it will inspire people to think about how they can approach staffing in some of their clinical services in a different way. Perhaps using the multidisciplinary team more effectively and encouraging services to think innovatively about how they provide care. And I think that's a real opportunity for them. And if they feel in any way that we're going to get in the way, talk to us about it. Talk to us about it before you change things if you think there's going to be a problem. So my inspector doesn't go in on an inspection, finds a new staffing model and has to make an instant decision about is this safe or not. Give us the opportunity to work with you on it. We can challenge you in the development phase, and that gives you an opportunity to do it really well, and it gives us confidence that you're doing it well.
And so I think you might argue that relationship with the relationship manager is absolutely crucial.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much indeed.